To another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim DLGG. And I'm joined by at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Hey, everybody. Hi. Thanks for being on my show.
Your show. Right when I was about to plug popculturenetwork.com, which is Dirt's website. And we've also got Agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And last but not least, we have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Hello, everybody.
And we are your Comic Book Chronicle hosts. Make sure to go to the website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account, at theclicknation. Like our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus, just search for The Click Nation. And also join the community, just search for The Click Nation Community. On iTunes and Stitcher Radio, just search for The Click Nation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. And last but not least, if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to our email address, theclicknation@gmail.com. And we were recording tonight live, Thursday, December 12th, 2013. In case anyone's ever watching this on YouTube or on Stitcher or iTunes or whatnot, and you want to watch live, just remember we record every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. So, let's get into some of the news from this week. We joked before the show started how organized we are now. We have a nice Google Doc that all of us can look at and update with news and what books we actually read.
If one of us would ever actually use it.
I.e. everyone who used it this week. But the first news will be about Archaea and Boom Vets forming a new publisher. So who added that nice news story?
That was me. I've been a fan of Archaea for several years, and they've always been known for putting out really nice hardcover books. That's one thing that they always said when they were at comic conventions, that they are book snobs who happen to make comics. And they were bought out last year by Boom and incorporated as an imprint of Boom Studios. And a lot of people kind of wondered, are they still going to be doing the hardcover books? Because under Boom, it looks like a lot of the stuff like, you know, Mouse Guard and that type of stuff that is serialized first and then collected in hardcovers later is still continuing. But some of those original graphic novels that they seem to do have kind of disappeared from the lineup. So there were questions what was happening. Well, one of the guys, Mike Kennedy, who was a publisher at Archaea, He is joining with Wes Harris, who is the vice president of publishing at Boom, and they have actually left the company and are starting their own company called Magnetic Press, and they are going back to that Archaea style of hardcover graphic novels. So it looks like Boom with Archaea is not going to be sticking with that hardcover, you know, first format that Archaea was known for. So now Magnetic Press, it looks like, is going to be the way to go. And one of the first books that they announced coming out in the spring of 2014 is called Wasted Lands from Dave Dorman. And Dave Dorman, a lot of people know from doing like Star Wars comic covers and things like that. He does a fully painted artwork style, and he's apparently working on a full-length graphic novel coming out from Magnetic Press. So that's something I'm really looking forward to.
Okay. It's funny because I haven't gotten into hardcovers over the last couple of years. It seems like as my attention span has dwindled, my ability to read long form books has decreased also. That's something I need to get back into.
Well, Archaea is one of those companies that if you're a member of the press, they love you. So if you go to a convention, they'll be like, well, here's a stack of hardcovers. You know, read these, review these for us, please. And you're like, yay! And then you realize you're carrying five hardcovers around for the next 8 hours that you're at the convention. But then, at the same time, it's nice.
And then you have to actually sit down and try to read one or two of them. But they were so nice to give them to you.
Yeah, but they've been doing some really nice stuff. One of the things they've been doing is bringing back the Jim Henson properties. So they did the Fraggle Rock books. They also did the Dark Crystal books. They're working on a Labyrinth book. So those have been getting a lot of attention, but then they've also been doing this thing called Black Label, and they've gotten guys like, the guy who played Spock in the new Star Trek movies. I can't think of his name.
The dude from Heroes.
Yeah. He sat down with them, and he wrote a graphic novel for them, that they adapted. And that's one of the things they're doing is reaching out to some of those people who are actors or musicians or, you know, working in a creative storytelling field that isn't comics and trying to bring them into comics and get them to do some of that stuff. So that's where Archaea made a lot of ripples over the last couple of years.
Question. I'm assuming that they probably have all different genres of books they publish, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There might be something in there that I'd enjoy. Okay. Next up is from DC. DC Comics cancels Batman The Dark Knight. My first question is, the Legends of the Dark Knight, Legends of the Dark Knight was the weekly or the digital book, mm-hmm. correct?
Right.
And this is actually a monthly book,
right?
Batman The Dark Knight.
This is the one that David Finch was working on.
Right.
Greg Horowitz took over as the writer for a long time, and they've had a bunch of different artists come in from time to time. And Ethan Van Sciver was one that did a lot of work for him. And what they tended to do in Legends of the Dark Knight was pick a villain and do a lot of villain-centric arcs. So you had Poison Ivy for 3 or 4 issues. You had the Mad Hatter for 4 or 5 issues. You had Clayface for 3 or 4 issues. So that was like the focus of that was looking at more of the rogues gallery and how the villains kind of define the hero. But it's kind of gotten to the point where sales on that one have just, you know, slowly slipped. And every time there's a new arc, it seems like people look, well, who's the villain on the next one? You know, it's not Joker. So, you know, it's not Penguin, you know, so it just kind of backs off. So that looks like the first big Batman book getting the cut in the New 52.
Plus, they have the Batman Eternal Weekly to take its place.
Yeah, well, they've got 8 other Batman books or whatever, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it can always be revived later if they feel like it, if they need another Batman book. There might be a character that comes up in a new story later that could use a Batman book. So.
Yeah, they might do like a special, you know, once a year, if they want to do a villain special on somebody, you might see the title return for that.
We also have Jeff Lemire announces that Animal Man is canceled come March 2014. But he will be bringing Animal Man along with him to the Justice League Canada book that Lemire will be writing.
You know, and The funny thing is that he wrote that he was done telling the story he wanted to tell. Like issue 29 just kind of ended the whatever road he was on. And apparently DC just said, you know, you've been doing this since day one. Do you want to stop it? Or do you think we should hand it over to somebody else? And he said, you know, I'm done telling the story so we could end it. So they're letting him actually write and draw for the final issue. And the artist he's been working with for the last year and a half or whatever is going to draw like the framing pages. And then he's going to do the story in between the framing pages. So he gets to finish it on his own terms. So good for him. Apparently he's the creator that doesn't have the problems with DC editorial that a bunch of the other people have.
Well, yeah, you can basically tell who's in, what they call it, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Who's
in star the good people. Graces.
Oh. Yeah, teacher's good
graces. Yeah. Teacher's pet, good graces.
Yeah.
Of DC. Like, cause especially when you write multiple books for DC, like Lemire does, cause what he does, the Justice League Dark, doesn't he do that? Or he used to do Justice League Dark, and now he's moving to the Justice League Canada. And doesn't he do one of the Trinity of Sin books? I don't know, I can't keep track of all these people.
Yeah, I have a hard time remembering. Cause,
Ray Fox, I'm getting him and Ray Fox mixed up.
And Matt Kent also does a lot of books.
I think Fox is the one that, however you say his last name, is the one that did does Justice League Dark and the Trinity of Sin book. But yeah, Lemire is tied to a bunch of different books, so you know, that's actually kind of cool. DC to take his whatever he felt like doing with the book, he wanted to end it, so they're ending it.
Yeah.
But they're letting it continue on, or letting the character continue on in another book, their team book. Okay. Let's see. This is a story I added. Well, actually, no, I'm missing one. David Morrell goes Rambo on the treatment of his Spider-Man script. I saw the headline for this, but I never actually clicked the article when I saw it earlier today.
Well, David Morrell is the guy who created Rambo, so that's just where that joke gets thrown in the headline.
Thrown.
But he wrote what was originally going to be a graphic novel or a deluxe format book, whatever, called Spider-Man Frost. And they decided to split it up into this Amazing Spider-Man 700 month. So 700.1 and 700.2 are his story that we're going to be in this, graphic novel or whatever. And when he got the pages back for 0.2, he realized that someone editorially had gone in and changed a bunch of dialogue. They had put in some bad jokes. They had word balloons missing on pages where they needed to be there to make sense of the story. And so he wrote 4 pages of notes back to Marvel of how to fix this. And Marvel supposedly fixed it. But then when they uploaded the files to the server to go to Comixology and to go to the printer, they uploaded the wrong set of files. So they uploaded the original set with all the mistakes in it, not the corrected set.
Oopsie.
So they say, Marvel says that the Amazing 700 is going to get reprinted, all 5 issues together in one graphic novel, format. And when they do that, they'll upload the correct ones. But for now, if you go to read it, you're getting the one that has all the mistakes in it.
And this happened in which point?
It didn't strike me at all. I made sure to read this, and I liked it. I didn't really see, what he was complaining about.
It almost sounds like he was saying, hey, if this book is bad, it's because of this, this, and that, and they screwed up, and it was not his writing, because I don't know if anybody was complaining about it. I mean,
I wasn't.
Yeah. Well, he says, someone at Marvel changed my captions, added weak jokes, repeated captions, deleted captions from panels that needed them, and inserted one caption that contradicts the theme.
You screwed my work. How dare you?
You edited you editors edited.
Well, but to be fair, he says, let's see. This has been a disappointing experience. I'm finished writing in this form. It's an exciting medium. The scripts are detailed, almost like movie scripts. My goal is extremely high to make readers believe in the characters. I thought the first part was poignant and moving. Now part 2 starts with weak jokes that destroy the continuity. One page even has the same caption in 2 consecutive panels.
Okay, so granted, it's fair.
He says, I can't publish the corrected pages. I don't own my script. Writing for comic books is like writing for a movie studio. It's called work for hire, and the company owns the result. So, I mean, he's just basically saying editorial, you know, messed it up, and there's nothing he can do to fix it, and he can't, you know. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
So, Agent 70, you read the point 2 and 3 that came out this week?
Hang on a moment.
I did Tall Putty Tad. No, I did. I did read it, and I enjoyed it. I did not notice. Granted, I did not read the list, the post that he that David Morrell put up that says exactly what pages. Does it say exactly what pages? The captions were changed.
Well, like, there's a joke on the first page where he says, "I bet Captain America doesn't have these problems," and apparently that was changed.
I gotcha.
Can't feel my face. Can't feel my face. That's repeated.
Mm-hmm. I kind of got. Well, see, here's the thing. It's cold up here in the Northeast, so I kind of sympathize with that. I can't feel my face. I was reading this on the way to work. I can't feel my face.
But then it repeats in the next in the next frame. But I mean, he just says it's a lot of little stuff like that, you know.
Right.
Just like little.
I think it's de minimis. I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like little mistakes. It's not that big of a deal. And he doesn't say that, you know, like, how dare they mess with it. He's just saying, like, you know, this is the first time I've done comics, and I don't know that I'll ever do it again because, you know, you work hard to fix it and make it right, and then they upload the wrong files, and there's nothing you can do to fix it, you know?
Wait, I thought he's done work for them before.
Not like according to what he posted.
Right. Okay. I thought I read something that said that.
But. Unless he did something in collaboration with somebody else, this is the first time he's done it, like, as his own, maybe.
Right. And the hardcover thing, that seems to be something that they do anyway. It was like, you know, if either if there was a change that they wanted to make, you know, or couldn't get done for the single issues, then they'll just, you know, put it in a collection. So that's not anything new with that.
Dark Geekus tweets, quote, "They tainted my artistic vision," unquote, and storms out of the room in dramatic fashion.
Next up in news, we have...
Oh, wait, here's the other thing. He wrote Captain America the Chosen.
There you go.
He's, I was going to say, he's Jeff Jarrett from TNA Wrestling. The Chosen One.
Oh.
Very outdated wrestling.
But yeah, that was written in collaboration with Mitch Breitweiser.
Okay.
So that was in collaboration, so this must be the first time he actually wrote it by himself.
Okay. Next news article is Scott Snyder jumped 6 months ahead in Batman with a spoiler fill issue 28. So I forget what day this week Scott Snyder went on Twitter. Basically, he said to thank all the fans for supporting the 0 year arc him and Greg Capullo were putting out. They decided right before the arc ends, they're going to have a issue where they jump a couple months in ahead in Batman's future to do some teases, and then they'll come back and end 0 year. And Snyder posted a tweet displaying a character that's going to be introduced in that leap in the future, and I kind of I don't think I tweeted it, but in my mind, I said, you know, the character drawn by, who drew it? I'm looking at the article. Dustin Nguyen?
Gwen.
Silent N. Gwen. It's a female with, like, black and blue color scheme, and she's got, like, this big, huge gun on her shoulder. It reminded me of the old Cable days. From X-Force.
Yeah, but didn't you like the old Cable days in X-Force?
I did. I have that whole run.
Yeah, but were there shoulder pads?
Actually, did they draw any feet?
In the comic book resources article, it says In what Snyder dubs as a thank you to the fans for supporting Zero Year, Snyder, James Tynion IV, and artist Dustin Nguyen will craft an entire issue that takes place 6 months in the future of the current DC Universe, which reveals all sorts of massive surprises coming to Gotham in the spring and summer of 2014. So, that's something to look forward to. And I'm sure whatever is shown in this will spill over into the weekly Gotham Eternal series. So that's going to, the 6 months later issue is number 28, and Batman 29 concludes the Dark City arc of Zero Year. And let's see, next is the Marvel announced that they're coming out with another original graphic novel by Mike Carey, writing, and Salvador LaRocca doing art, and it's called X-Men No More Human. And it's actually going to take place in Marvel continuity. Supposedly it takes place right after the events of Battle of the Atom. And if I remember correctly, the Earth's population, all the humans are going to disappear, which leaves mutants. Which kind of reminds me of sort of what's happening in Uncanny Avengers, at least in the upcoming issues. At least where all the mutants are raptured up to an arc and they have their own society. So this will be happening on Earth. And that's set to come out sometime in 2014. Everyone doesn't care about X-Men except me, so.
Nope.
Listen, I love X-Men. I saw that tag for that, you know, that tagline for that story. I was like, really? So.
And I hate to say it because I love Salvador LaRocca's art, but at least lately, I don't know if it's the coloring or the inking, but his characters are looking like they're on steroids. Like Cyclops is like Cyclops is like Cock Diesel looking strong. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. I guess the takeaway is though that they're trying to ramp up those graphic novels, original graphic novels. Like they've been saying they were going
Agreed. Yeah, they want to do more long form, you know, hardcover storytelling.
They had the Avengers,
Wartime.
Yeah, which I still need to read.
It was okay.
Yeah.
It was okay. I'm an Avengers fan, and I was thinking, okay.
Speaking of more things said in DC's future, DC finally announced the 5 years later event is going to be, but it's going to be a new weekly series called The New 52 Futures End. And like I said,
always with the weekly, these people.
Set 5 years in the future.
52 plus 5.
And it's supposedly some of the main characters that are going to be involved in this are, I'm going off my memory while I wait for the link to open, but Frankenstein, Firestorm.
Really?
Yeah, Frankenstein, Firestorm, and the New 52 debut of Batman Beyond.
That's the selling point right there.
And the writing,
they finally work in Terry McGinnis.
The creative team on it, at least the writing people doing the writing, are Jeff Lemire, who we talked about earlier, Dan Jurgens, Keith Giffen, and Brian Azzarello. Is Dan Jurgens writing anything for DC currently? Anyone know?
Isn't he doing Stormwatch?
I thought that was Giffen. Or no, that was Starlin, Jim Starlin. I thought was doing Stormwatch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because that's the reason they waited so long to cancel it, because one of the creators they have respect for was doing it, and they want to cancel it early. But yeah, Batman Beyond somehow being involved in the New 52. That's the person I was referring to as someone might be needing a future DC book in the future, or a future Batman book in the future.
Interesting.
All right. Also have a new clip from the Image Revolution, which is a documentary on the artists that formed together to create the Image Comics. And it shows the beginning of Image Comics. And you can go and buy, or you can go and order the documentary on the cquart.org website, which I actually bookmarked to maybe purchase down the line. I kind of want to see what it looks like.
Yeah, on the article, there's a clip from which I couldn't be able to get to play for some reason, but they also did, they've done a few. They've also done, the other one I'm kind of curious about is the Claremont one, that has been mentioned here in the past. So.
But earlier this week, I watched a little short video where, was it Todd and Tom McFarlane and Rob Liefeld discuss how they told the Marvel editors they were leaving, and then how they went across the street to tell DC the same thing, and DC was all excited, thinking that they were going to come work for them, but they were like, no, we're going to do our own thing. So, yeah. Comixology is giving one free comic book away a day for 12 days. And currently it's on day 3, which I had no clue about.
Till get on that 4. Twitter, get on it.
Right before the show.
It's 4. That's my typo.
4 days.
3,
so 3. So, what books have everyone purchased for free so far?
I mean, I've been getting the ones every day.
The first one was a Batman book. Was it Batman 20? I forgot what number it is.
Death of the Family.
Oh, that's right. The first issue, right?
Right. Which I already had. So that didn't do me any good.
Right. But it's nice to read it. For me, you know, as a brand new tablet owner, it was nice to see what Guided View actually looked like. Mm. So, you know, that was a nice perk.
And then Lazarus number 1 was the second issue.
I like that. That was a nice
intro. I already have. I've been sitting on for 6 months. I haven't read.
Did you read it digitally this time?
I still haven't read it. I got it, but I still haven't read it. Then the third one was Red Sonja number 1, which...
Oh, I did not pick up Red Sonja number 1.
Passed on that one. Oh, cool. And then today is Judge Dredd number 1 from the new IDW series. So I'll grab that one.
So it basically seemed like they're just stuff that they kind of want to say, hey, check this one out. You know, this might be something you want to check. You know.
They're like drug dealers. Have a taste.
First one's free.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of these are one-shots. They're all the first issue of an arc or ongoing series. So they give you that taste for free so they can hook you.
That's right.
A lot of the stuff that – a lot of those free books on Comixology – are usually the number ones to try to hook you. They're not smart. Okay, next news article. San Diego Comic-Con 2014 registration postponed until next year.
Why?
It looks like, well, from what they said in the article, it was basically saying, hey, we're just doing stuff on the back end and adding stuff like a shopping. They're basically making changes to the site and the back end. So they're not going to open it up early.
They need to, because it's notorious for selling out so quickly and people having problems accessing the website. So
right. And they're trying to work on both of those in addition to adding other things.
Maybe they're working hard to implement that thing they had at New York Comic Con, where you go to pick up your badge and it automatically tweets for you. I'm so excited to be at the con.
No, that was at New York Comic Con.
Right, because I didn't go this year. I didn't get to experience that.
So no one cares about when registration opens for these cons.
Hey, if we were West Coast, we would.
All I know is I might have a connect for New York Comic-Con now, so.
Really?
Crossing my fingers.
For yourself or for the show? Come on now.
For me.
Don't throw that out.
I got to get the in first and then.
Wait a second. No,
are you sneaking everybody in under your coat?
We're going to do a press kit. Are you kidding me? We're going to
It's like the rapper that gets put on first and then he brings
that is awful. It's like we're not going to be entourages.
No, y'all gonna
be like the Woo. We're going to be like individual artists putting out our stuff. Oh mercy. Anyway, so is that the last news item we have? Let me see if I have anything to add.
You didn't
put up the spreadsheet, so it's not worth mentioning.
Yeah, If it's not on the sheet, we can't do it.
Oh, the heck with that, yo.
Scott Snyder's dead. Nope, can't talk about it. It's on the sheet.
But I will say
something that didn't make it to the sheet. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, Dirk keeps reminding me to bring up the mid-season finales of Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So when news is over, we can...
Oh, okay. Well, I was just gonna say we're gonna go through real quick the Marvel solicits, because those were released today. That's probably why I didn't make it to the sheet, because you know people were too busy earning a living when the solicits came out, so we didn't have a chance to post it to the sheet. So, did you guys have a chance to look through them?
Nope.
There's a lot. I did.
I didn't see a lot. I mean, yeah, it's mostly all the all new Marvel Now number ones. Yeah. I didn't see anything there worth, as far as like surprises worth bringing up.
Yeah, I'm going through the what we learned from Marvel's March 2014 solicitations on Newsarama and the highlights. But we already know a lot of this stuff. The X-Men and are going to be taking on S.H.I.E.L.D. Rags Morales is making his Marvel. I think we already talked about that. I guess he's going exclusive with Marvel now.
The guy that's going to be drawing Wolverine X-Men went exclusive to Manvar Azrar, something like that.
That's right.
Yeah, which sucks because I really like his artwork, but I don't want to read Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yes, you do. You know you love him on Ultimate Comics X-Men.
There you go. So there's a metric ton of first issues coming out from Marvel in March 2014. We've got a Daredevil number one, a Moon Knight number one, a Silver Surfer number one, all new Ghost Rider number one, which is like, you know, I'll talk about that after we finish this up, because this is what I noticed. Captain Marvel number one, Iron Patriot number one, Magneto number one, Secret Avengers number one, Wolverine and the X-Men number one that we've already mentioned, and Avengers Undercover. What a mouthful. Now, if anyone saw the solicits and they noticed what the all-new Ghost Rider image that accompanies that, it's kind of ironic and kind of sad in the wake of the passing of Paul Walker and the delay in the Fast and Furious franchise to see what this new Ghost Rider image is. Now, do you have a picture of that to put up, Dirt?
Sorry, I was reading something else. But
in Marvel's defense, I will say that they had plans, I'm sure, like, plans for this new Ghost Rider. And they probably already have it applied to, like, issue 5 already. And that probably happened, like, 6 months ago, way before Paul Walker's untimely death.
Right. So, but just to spoil it, the image is of, I guess, the latest Ghost Rider and a flaming 1969 Dodge Charger straight out of the first Fast and Furious movie. So it's kind of, you know, I like the image, but it makes me, you know, it makes me cringe a little bit as a fan of the Fast and Furious series.
And they also, in the wording of solicit, they used the words fast in capital letters and then furious in
capital
letters.
Exactly. Timing, not so good.
They know what audience they're.
Obviously, this is something that's been in the works for, you know, at least 4 months, if not longer. And how long do you think it's going to be until you see, like, tonight on 2020, Marvel Comics cashes in on Fast and Furious death? You know?
I was going to say Marvel doesn't really make headline news like that anymore. But I can compare it to like WWE, where they're just now starting to incorporate twerking into their Raw shows, and twerking has been going on for
years.
Basically, it just shows how WWE is always late when it comes to things being in pop culture. So,
the one other story, actually, I do want to push out real quick, Tim. Just got to stop you here. DC is fixing the Detective Comics 27 subscription problem. Somebody got a note in the mail saying that they were a print subscriber to Detective. They would not be getting Detective 27 because it's an oversized special edition, you know, $7.99 issue. And apparently, you know, DC doesn't actually handle the print subscriptions. Like, they contract out to a fulfillment company, and the fulfillment company actually does the subscriptions, and the fulfillment company actually decides which books you can subscribe to in print and which ones you can't. And like, when the new 52 started, people wanted to subscribe to all 52 issues, and they didn't do that. They only had like 12 of them that you could subscribe to in print, and people couldn't understand why. And DC said, because it's not us. It's, you know, we contract out to these companies, and they figure out which ones, you know, that they can afford to do this with. They'll sell enough copies, whatever. So they sent out this letter saying that subscribers would not be getting this Detective Comics 27 because it was just way too expensive. They did it with Green Lantern with that special edition, and apparently they just said it was too expensive. They couldn't subsidize the cost, and they wouldn't be doing it. Enough people complained that DC Comics' Dan DiDio actually stepped forward and contacted the fulfillment center and said, you are going to do this. And if the cost is just way too high that you can't make up, then DC Comics will pay the difference. But people are who subscribe to Detective are going to get that issue. So DC actually stepped up and fixed the problem, which is something that you really don't expect these days.
And also that same Detective Comics, that's the 27 oversized issue, right?
Right.
Frank Miller is not going to be...
he is. But... They brought it back. Yeah, they reinstated it.
Oh. See, that's what happens when I read something late at night yesterday and then don't see whatever happened today while I was busy at work.
Yeah, they sent out a thing saying that for whatever reason it wasn't supposed to go away or whatever, and it's back now and you can still order it. It's fine.
So he will be providing art somehow, some way?
Well, I guess originally he was going to do artwork as a two-page spread. You know, just like a pinup thing in the back of the book, and they liked it so much they were going to make it into a cover, and then they decided that they weren't going to make it into a cover, and then they decided they will go ahead and make it into a cover. So, I mean, who knows what's going on, but it's a cover. It's back.
Okay. Cool. So now to the mid-season finales of both Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Arrow. I'm pretty sure I'm probably the only one that watched both of these this week. For Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's not much I can say because it wasn't that good to me. The show overall hasn't been that good to me. I'm still like,
I watched this. I'm
actually like 3 or 4 episodes behind, but I did watch the mid-season finale yesterday. But, I mean, they brought back Jay Augustine.
August Richards.
Yeah. August Richards, who pilot. He's still got his centipede powers, but he's now a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent to add some muscle. So they finally have someone with powers on the team.
And I guess I think there, because I remember seeing another article saying that there's going to be 2 members. So it's him and probably somebody else who's going to come along, maybe after the in the next block, season, whatever.
Yeah, but who cares?
Hey, this show's good.
Is it?
I want to give it a shot. I just have to catch up.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna keep watching it, but in hopes to get better.
Yeah. Now I'm saying that as being a couple of shows behind, but you know.
And I'm a diehard Marvel fan.
Yeah.
But Arrow, which I watched about an hour or two before the show. This season finale was exciting. And I think where Arrow is beating S.H.I.E.L.D., even the first season, you know, second season better than the first, obviously, but even the first season, they incorporated a lot of DC characters in the show. That's what people are tuning in to see. They want to see the characters they read about on TV.
Well.
Really?
I don't. With the S.H.I.E.L.D. show, I'm not looking for that too terribly much. But from what I've seen, though, they are going to go in more of that direction.
Right. I think I saw something where they posted, or something was posted, where they're going to definitely have much more of a Marvel flavor in the second half of the season.
Well, that's what I was looking for. I mean, that's the reason why I stopped watching it.
The thing is,
I wanted a Marvel show, and it just didn't feel like it.
I mean, it is. It's just the fringe. It's not like you're not going to see Thor or whoever just pop in and out. Because if they start doing that, then it wouldn't be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It'll just be, hey, it's Avengers and these other guys.
Exactly. It's Avengers, you know, guest star of the week.
Their way of incorporating Marvel Universe stuff is for Captain America, Iron Man, or Thor reference thrown in here and there.
Yeah.
Like the cheapest
way to do it.
They promoted the mid-season finale like, you're never going to guess what happens tonight. This is when S.H.I.E.L.D. starts incorporating more of the Marvel Universe in their show, and I didn't see any difference. Really.
Yeah, they'll throw in other stuff. I mean, yeah, it probably won't be any direct, like, people coming through, but it'll be just like, hey, Fury's car, or, you know, hey, remember this happened, or, you know, I don't know, hey, there's a web line, I wonder who's that, where'd this come from, or something, I don't know.
And supposedly the mid-season...
That would be something.
If I'm not mistaken, the mid-season finale had the lowest rating so far of the season.
Oops.
Oh. But yes, watch Arrow, people.
No.
That's my reason.
Dirt has his own reason.
Show the folks what the Arrow reference you showed me before we started recording.
Oh, yeah. Where is that? Yeah, we were talking about a book beforehand, and I go, oh, yeah, I've got a copy of it right here. Oh, and look, on the back, another Arrow ad with another dude with no shirt on.
But it's actually not Arrow, which I thought, you know, I just saw a six-pack of abs on the screen when Dirk put the image up, but it's actually for Diggle.
Just wait until the Arrow workout tape.
What's his name?
He's named after Andy Diggle.
Yeah.
Oh. I thought maybe it was Dirk Diggler.
Diggler. Who actually joined, he got incorporated into the Green Arrow comic book universe by, is it Jeff Lemire writing that too?
Very well could be.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? We'll say yes.
I will find out shortly. I say Dork Geek has sent some tweets. Did he send that to anyone else?
Yeah.
Not me. I'm not mentioning
First he says Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Less Than Symbol, Heroes, Season 1, obviously. And said Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is so muted. It seems fit for the hub Saturday afternoon after Power Rangers, not prime time. I've seen people complain about that, you know, if S.H.I.E.L.D. was on, like, HBO or on FX or whatever, like Walking Dead and all those type of shows, it would be a lot better.
Which yeah, it would probably be about right.
A lot of shows can say that, though. At least I feel that.
If that was what they were going for, but they're probably deliberately not going for that. And that's why I said on at 8 o'clock on network. Right.
That's going to be the Secret Avengers show. You know what I mean? Like when they do that stuff, like Black Ops stuff.
Marvel TV side of things has dropped the ball, at least to me, because I don't watch any. Besides S.H.I.E.L.D., which I'm reluctantly watching, I don't watch any of their stuff anymore. I don't watch Agents of Hulk, Smash, whatever. I don't watch this new Avengers Assemble. I don't watch Ultimate Spider-Man anymore.
I don't blame you on either one of those. But what about the Netflix stuff that comes up? You don't think you're interested?
I don't have Netflix either. But I will watch that. If they can't get that right, then I'm just sticking to the movies.
The animated stuff is okay. You know, what I think a lot of us have difficulty with is just getting around to watching it, because I believe they show them Sunday mornings, and I'm just not at my television at that time. And DVR, you know, I don't watch enough TV to justify a DVR, so, you know, I have to find, you know, alternate means of getting to it. You know, and it takes, you know, it's not as simple as that.
Yeah, I saw that first Avengers Assemble, and before it aired, and it was like, no, that's all right, I'm good. They didn't have to get rid of Earth Mightiest Heroes for that.
Oh yes, they did. It has to be under the Disney umbrella.
Yeah.
My kids will watch them all on Netflix. Like, we don't watch them. We don't get Disney XD, and we don't get the hub, so we don't get those channels. But once they show up on Netflix, my kids totally do the Netflix thing where they watch the entire season in three days. Yeah.
And I'll probably do that.
They're perfect, Breaking Bad fans in the making, right? You know, that type.
Yeah. Like me with Dexter.
There you go. Everyone's got that. All right. So what do we got next?
I think we have review time. Dun, 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 dun. So since we have this new doc, should we just have each person go down, do the list of books that they read this week?
Well, I mean, you can still go through, like, the studios, and if anybody's got anything in there, then drop in. So, I don't know.
Okay, that's two opinions. You have two other people. What say you, Agent 70? And
I didn't put anything in the list, so I'm okay with doing it the old way for one more week.
And Dirt doesn't care. Give me 1 second here. Got to bring up an old comic list. Okay, so for the last time, going down the comic list, Boom Studios.
Oh, I read a Boom book. Hold on.
You beat me to the crickets. You beat me to the crickets. Good job.
I know. I knew I had to say something fast or it would be coming. All right.
I had a pause there.
All right. Is this working on the new doc? Can you see the cover?
Yes.
All right. Protocol Orphans number 2. Basically, the idea behind this series is that the government goes out and finds orphans and trains them to be spies. So they are taken, you know, when they're anywhere from 5 to 10 years old, and they just become government property and get brainwashed and trained. And in the first issue, they go for a training mission, and one of the people in the training mission ends up dead, and he's murdered. And you don't know who does it or why it happened. And so in the second issue, they've kind of reconstructed the team, and they changed some of the players around. But the idea is now it's been a couple years, and they have these new identities. They've kind of meshed into society, and now they're being called back out to go on this secret mission. And they're basically abducting a guy because they know that he's somehow tied to some upcoming terrorist attack. But when they finally get him, it turns out he doesn't know anything about it. And now they have to kind of unravel this mystery of who's actually involved and how it, you know, so you know that somehow it's going to tie into the assassination that happened in the first issue, but you still don't really know how or why. So it's one of those where it's setting up this mystery and it's giving you all these little tidbits, and then you're just kind of waiting for the pieces to fall into place. And I really like it.
Okay. There's your. I thought you were going to go straight to regular show skips number 2.
No, I didn't read that one yet.
The kids read it yet?
Although, to be fair, I do have a copy of this, but haven't read it.
Okay.
I did read 3 Guns, number 5.
How is that? I read the first issue and just haven't had time to keep up with it.
Oh, well, are you familiar with the original series, or did you see the movie?
I haven't, neither.
It's like I got done with this issue, and I felt like I need to sit down and start taking notes, because this is a series where somebody gets double-crossed, and then somebody gets triple-crossed, and then somebody sets out to double-cross somebody, and then realize that the person they're going to double-cross is double-cross somebody, so they got to try to undouble cross. I mean, it's just one of those things where everybody has like 5 agendas and there are secret deals in between different characters. And so basically you've got a white supremacist who's trying to buy guns from a Russian arms dealer. And the guy who's the right-hand man to the Russian arms dealer is an undercover agent. And the guy who's brokering the deal for the white supremacist is an undercover agent. And the lady who's the girlfriend to the Russian gunrunner is an undercover agent, but none of them know that the other people are agents. So it's like they're all working for different government groups, different spy agencies, whatever, but none of them, you know what the deal is with the other people. So you get all of these, you know, the CIA is making deals with DEA, but they don't tell the people in the field, you know. So stuff goes down, and then they realize they've been sold out by, you know, their boss back at the office type of thing. So it's another one of those that I really like because of all the intrigue and the spy stuff and the, you know, political assassinations and that kind of stuff that go along with it.
Sounds like you need a whiteboard with the little pins and attaching one person to the other and whatnot.
Yeah, you're gonna use a lot of push pins and a lot of yarn.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking of the push pins, remind me of the end of era where they send up Barry Allen in the flesh. So you have that to look forward to. Okay. Dark Horse, which I can bring up, because they were on my list of at least one book I read from them this week, and I reviewed, which you can read on popculturenetwork.com and theclicknation.com. That was Brain Boy number 0.
Bum, 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 bum.
I made a point to review non-Big Two books this week. And this was one of them.
And was it worth it?
Yes, because I'm enjoying Brain Boy. So this is, of course, there were previous three issues before this, but after the first three issue arc ended, they decided to jump back to issue 0 to show an early mission by Matt Price, a.k.a. Brain Boy. And for those who aren't familiar with him, his parents were killed when he was a youngster, and then he was, I guess, sort of adopted and raised by Albright Industries, which is this big industry in the whatever Dark Horse superhero universe that they've created. And Albright is actually Captain Midnight, another Dark Horse solo book. He's the guy that got lost in the Bermuda Triangle back in like whatever war that they fought Hitler in.
Whatever war they fought Hitler in.
I'm not
Just letting that slide.
I'm not the
history. This is like Animal House. It's like Animal House.
He's on a roll. Let it go. Yeah.
So,
that
yeah.
plot has never been used in comics before, by the way. So you have no point of reference on whatever that war with Hitler was.
What war was that? World War II?
Stop.
That was the Falkland Islands War.
So he has, of course, Brain Boy, because he has telekinetic and telepathic powers, which he uses. Albright Industries rents him out to the U.S. Secret Service to do mind sweeps for areas for any hostiles, for like important dignitaries and celebrities and so forth. And the only issue I had with this was the 0 issue kind of followed the same plot as the opening of the first arc, where he's on a mission, things go wrong, he has to, of course, solve it. It's written by Fred Van Lent, and the guest artist on this one was Freddie Williams II. So art was great. Writing Fred Van Lent, he also writes Archer and Armstrong. So two humorous books, which I like, and action with some humor tossed in. So I recommend it.
G.I. Joe, I think he's doing.
Yeah, he just started G.I. Joe, I believe.
Which is pretty good.
Which I tried reading G.I. Joe, but I've realized I don't really care about their comic book stories.
They're way better than the movies.
Oh, well, yeah.
Although, we'll get to that when we get there.
I'm surprised they don't have a robot looking like The Rock.
Yeah, but I'd rather watch either the G.I. Joe movies than any of the Transformers live-action movies.
that's a close one right there.
Haven't seen any of the other Transformers ones in full. Yeah,
consider yourself lucky and blessed.
Yeah, listen, seriously, you can avoid the second one like the plague. Just avoid it.
And the first one.
Make sure to watch the fourth, because as Michael Bay says, he's done being, just be a more mature and non-kiddie Transformers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That's not really the problem.
Haven't heard that before.
Mm.
Whatever happened to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie he was doing? You don't hear a jack about that anymore.
Yeah, I think he went silent for that. That's probably a good reason.
I think they probably finished the principal photography, and now it's all effects.
Now they're working on Bad Boys 3.
Yeah. That's what I'm waiting on.
They actually, I think they are. But... Yeah. Oh,
you think I'm kidding?
Seriously.
Yeah, I saw an article recently. But anyway, that's another thing.
Moving on.
Yep.
So, let's see. That's Dark Horse. I'm assuming no one else has anything else to mention.
No, I think we can jump to DC.
DC.
Woohoo, yeah.
Let's check the dock and see who read some DC books this week. I see Dirt's got something down.
I got one.
What's your
FBP, of course, because, you know, that is me.
The Federal Bureau of Physics.
Yep. So this was still jogging along. They got a new member to the group. She's not very talkative. She's a little oddball to them. This is the start of a two-parter, I guess, dealing with her and a little bit of the changes in the world. But at least these next two seem to be focusing more on her a little. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. Part one of two. Is it only a two-issue book?
No. Well, two-part story. Two-part story. Yeah.
I just saw the two-part. Okay.
Yeah, I should have clarified that one, but yeah.
Cool.
All right. Let's see. Who else had DC? I can go ahead. I had one, so like Roddy Cat, I'll get my one out the way. I read the Justice League 3000 number one.
What'd you think?
I was trying to explain it to Dirt earlier, without spoiling it. So it said like 3000 in the year 3000. your five DC, the five, decaying Justice League members. Compose.
You're never gonna get that out of your head now, right?
It's already forgotten. But they have your five main DC Justice League characters, and you notice they all know each other, but yet their personalities are a little off. And it involves Cadmus. So if you're familiar with Cadmus from the DC universe, then you can... There's a couple of guesses of how this new team of Justice League came about.
Amanda Waller is still alive.
I will never say. Mm. But there is a shout-out or a callback to the original DC Comics animated TV show that used to be on, and some characters that appeared on there who, as far as I know, haven't been in the comics before, but they kind of get referenced here.
Form of?
Man?
Is that the clue?
Yes.
Huh. Yes.
Huh. Okay, now I have to read this.
So they still have ice water in the year 2000.
But
in the year 3000.
The other thing I'll add is that it's your typical, the team is together, but they don't like each other. They bicker and squabble and fight amongst themselves. Stuff you notice in every new team comp has to have friction between the team members. But I enjoyed it. The art is great. I found myself. Is it William Porter?
Howard Porter.
Howard Porter. He used to do Justice League or JLA.
Yeah. I've never, I didn't read DC stuff back then, so I never saw any of his artwork. But I found myself like studying the art since I want to try to start drawing now. Like his back, there's hardly any captions that are just empty. Like everything has background in them, which I appreciate. And like the detail and the facial and like the detail and all the lines was really nice. So for now, I will keep reading it, and I plan to review it and write a review of it this week. So that's my one DC.
All right. I see Dirt has a bunch of DC. I may ride along with that. I did read Do you have Justice League of America number 10? You do.
Let's see.
If there's anything here. Did you read Nightwing 26?
I didn't. I tell you what, I was going to read it, and then I started to flip through it and realized it's not the story I thought it was going to be, so I didn't read it.
I was confused.
Is that the next? Is that going to happen in the next issue?
Well, because of
Forever Evil. Right, yeah, because of Forever Evil.
In Forever Evil, Nightwing is captured by the villains. They give away his secret identity, and they're basically holding him hostage. So mm-hmm. I saw this issue of Nightwing. He's bloody. He's battered. It looks like there's prison bars behind him. So I thought, oh, this must tie into Forever Evil.
So I really
want to see this. So I start flipping through it, and it has absolutely nothing to do with Forever Evil.
Right. I was about to say, I, too, was hoodwinked. I opened this book and started reading it, and I was just dumbfounded and like, wait, we're back to like a regular Nightwing story? What's going on? So, you know, if you thought some of those Infinity crossover issues were kind of out of order or a little late to the party, this was just completely out of place.
The only thing I can assume is that Forever Evil hasn't hit yet in Nightwing, because Forever Evil
is
a 7-month storyline, so it may not be until, you know, issue 5 comes out that it actually hits the Nightwing monthly book or whatever. I would assume it'll hit at some point. If it doesn't, that seems like a big mistake.
No, absolutely.
They made it seem like, at least in the solicits for the summary of this issue, it seemed like it catches up next issue. Hopefully, that's what happened. I haven't been enjoying Nightwing though.
But it's just that this issue is not what I wanted to read, so I stopped.
Right. And I don't see Superman Wonder Woman number 3 on anybody's list.
I meant to put it on there and I forgot.
Okay, so you read it?
I did read it.
Okay, so what'd you think? We can go back and forth because I read this on my way home today.
Okay, let's see. Let me grab it here. Yeah.
I will say, for much as I talk about Superman, not enjoying Superman, I have been reading a lot more of his books. And with that comes enjoying Action Comics by Greg Pak and Aaron Cutter. Not sure how you pronounce his last name. His art I enjoyed. And I read Superman Wonder Woman, which, of course, I like Tony Daniels' art. Not sure exactly.
I was going to say that there was definitely a highlight.
And I read, was it Batman, Superman, whatever that's called. Not sure I... of course, I love Brett Booth's art, but not sure if I'm enjoying the whole...
Sideways?
That and the Mongol story. Jimmy Olsen doesn't seem in character to me, even though I don't read his books enough to know what his character is.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that storyline at all.
Yeah.
Okay. And especially it being sideways just kind of annoys me the entire time I'm trying to read it. And the action that you read, Tim, is that the story with Lana Lang?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I really like that one a lot, too.
And actually, I read the first one that Pat, I guess it was the Zero Year Tie-In was the first one I read, because I think 26 is already out, but I haven't read that one yet.
Was that the Lana Lang one where she's on a boat?
Yes.
That was okay, 25. I read that.
I read that. Maybe I'm a little behind. I read that.
But go on.
But, okay, so Superman Wonder Woman 3, part of the whole theme of this book is that you have these two superhero characters who, you know, every time they do something, you know, publicly, it's news. You know, they're always being followed. They're always, you know, the paparazzi for superheroes, whatever. And so part of the hook of this book is trying to show what their quote unquote normal life is. So it's like normal life for them sometimes is fighting bad guys, and sometimes it's trying to solve a mystery, and sometimes it's just trying to figure out, like, what exactly their relationship is, you know, how they are supposed to interact with each other.
Right. And what you get Superman for Christmas.
Yeah, and that was...
Spoiler alert.
The theme of this one is she's trying to figure out what to give the guy who can, you know, do anything.
For the man who has everything, maybe?
Right.
But the big... you know, hook of this issue, whatever, is that General Zod appears, and he has escaped from the Phantom Zone. And, you know, at this point, no one really knows if Zod is, you know, a force to be reckoned with or someone they can trust. You know, he just seems to be another guy who somehow escaped the destruction of Krypton. Yeah. So the funny thing is that as much as this story is about Zod and they're trying to contain him and trying to figure out what to do with him and whatever, it's also the Steve Trevor with his Justice League of America team and Wonder Woman and Superman and the triangle between them, because Steve Trevor is, you know, the old boyfriend,
right?
And Superman's the new boyfriend, and you have this whole kind of subplot thing going, you know, where you can tell that Trevor is still jealous, but he doesn't want to really act it. And there are these awkward moments where they're all kind of talking to each other and trying to keep it civil, but at the same time, you know that they all just want to yell at each other. And I just really like the way the characters are really made real. You know, that's one of the things with DC books is that you've got Superman, who's basically a god. You've got Wonder Woman, who's a goddess. Like, how do you make these characters seem real when they are so powerful and so iconic? And that's something that this book does, is it really does bring them down to earth, so to speak, and really does make them relatable. Plus, it has Hawkman in it.
Yeah, I was about to say, as much as you can relate to characters who are gods and aliens, but anyway, I like this book because it definitely seemed to move things along, you know, at a brisk pace. There are, like Dirt said, there's definitely some good characterization in the book. There's, you know, there's a couple of nice little guest spots that that Batman makes, and let's see who else. The Justice League of America characters definitely make much more of a more than a cameo appearance, and they definitely have an impact. It was kind of nice to see John Jones, the Martian Manhunter, have some spotlight, even though he's generally getting his butt whooped by General Zod.
Yeah.
So I like this. I just recently caught up on the book, so I'm interested to see where this goes. I definitely think Charles Sewell, you know, Mr. You know, practices law and still has a ton of time to write these things. You know, I think he's got a good handle on this relationship, this kind of weird celebrity / superhero relationship. And I he's definitely gonna, you know, explore some of the, I guess, some of the more stereotypical things and some of the less likely or the less, you know, classically superhero tropes that might be part of this.
And I think also part of the reason why I like this so much is because the first issue, it ended with the attack by Doomsday, and so you're just kind of like, oh, this book is doing every cliche. It's throwing way too many things in here way too early, but that's kind of a red herring for the series. So it redeemed, like, you read that first one, you're just like, ugh. But then it redeems itself, and it comes back, and I really, really liked it.
All right, cool.
So we're liking Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. That's the verdict.
Yeah, so far.
Yeah.
Okay. So far. Who else has got DC? I think we covered all the DC I read. Oh, no, but Batman. Jump back in the alphabet.
Did you read Batman?
Yes, I just finished it. Batman 26. So what did I think of this? This was actually a really interesting issue. Capullo's art in this was kind of... maybe it's because I'm getting used to reading this stuff on a tablet, but it seemed, maybe what Capullo is doing is trying to really emphasize the fact that this is in the past and the characters haven't put on like that adult weight yet. You know, a lot of the characters are a little skinnier and a little bit more streamlined, and maybe that's just a little off-putting to me. But in terms of the story itself, Snyder's crafting a good little tale about the after effects of the Riddler attack and the blackout, and I think the art by Capullo again is probably what I was more struck by. He's definitely pulling off the early Batman with the purple gloves and the costume is definitely reminiscent of some of the earliest versions of Batman that we're all familiar with. You know, the ears are a little bit more floppy, if you picked up on that.
Yeah, and he's not wearing the battle armor that the new 52
exactly,
is for.
Exactly. So it's kind of cool to see that. Overall, I thought the story was okay in terms of just, you know, the execution and where it's going and the villain in it. This Death, Mr. Bones, you know, whoever this guy is.
Dr. Death, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, it kind of felt like Dr. Death really didn't even need to be part of the story. It's like he seems to be like the one character too much going on right now, because you've got, they've added a little bit of ambiguity to Gordon. He is not the total good guy that he's usually portrayed as. He does have some skeletons in his closet. And, you know, at this point, Bruce is still trying to find himself. He's still trying to figure out exactly what kind of hero he's going to be. So he does have these moments where he's kind of lashing out in anger, and moments where he's kind of unsure of himself. And it's nice to see some of that stuff, you know, portrayed, where he's not just like this old grizzled veteran and, you know, Gordon is the super clean police commissioner. But the Dr. Death character, you know, I mean, I could take him or leave him. I don't really care for him. There's nothing really about him that draws me to him or makes me care about him. Or if they bring him back, I'm not going to be like, ooh, he's back. You know, there's just really nothing about him that strikes me as particularly interesting about him. But the other aspects of the story I did like. So it's not like he detracts from the story either. He's just kind of there.
Agreed.
I will say, I got 2 points. The first is, it's funny how, you know, when the new 52 launched, you know, it was supposed to be showing the, you know, the making the heroes younger and, you know, changing up things for all these established heroes. If they had actually relaunched Batman like they did with everyone else and forgotten all the continuity, Zero Year could have been sort of like the basis for Batman in the new 52.
Yeah, I think it should have been. Like, I think this is the story that should have been the first few issues of the series. And that was one of my complaints that I had with the new 52, is that you had Justice League that started with all these characters meeting for the first time, but then it just jumps ahead 5 years and all the series are set, you know, the 5 years later. It just kind of felt like they had a missed opportunity there. And I kind of wonder if the idea of doing a story like this is trying to kind of make up for that, where they go, okay, now we know what everybody wanted, let's go back and do it. Because they did that with Action, you know, they did that with Wonder Woman, but Batman just didn't.
But they can't, you know what it is? Because Justice League was basically their flagship title. They can't have every hero that's in the Justice League a rookie. So I think that's definitely a byproduct of, you know, Justice League being the, you know, kind of the lead flagship book of the New 52 relaunch. They have to have the heroes in a certain place so that they can team up.
Yeah. Well, and that was always the thing with Justice League in the past, was the characters were always there, and then they decided, hey, let's team up these characters and we can sell more comics.
Exactly.
Know? So that's how a team like Justice League, or the Avengers for that matter, that's how they came into being in the first place. So, but yeah, I mean, I definitely prefer getting this type of origin story that kind of, you know, lays out these characters, you know, so you can see how it is different in this new universe. And we're 2 years plus into the new 52, and we're still talking about it as the new universe, you know, this new history and this new timeline, and seeing how these new characters interact. So they still have this opportunity to give you something you haven't seen before with these characters and make you somewhat excited for, you know, characters who've been around for 70 years. You know, there is something that the new 52, a lot of people said it was a mistake, but, you know, 2 years into it, we're still kind of excited for the new stuff that's coming along.
Some characters, but yeah.
And the other thing I'll mention is, it seems like there's a lot of villains involved in this Zero Year, because it's the Riddler, got this Dr. Death, supposedly. I don't remember seeing stuff about Poison Ivy being involved. It seems like a lot.
Well, they're all going to take advantage of what's going on, so.
Well, and that also kind of goes back to the whole question of, do the villains make Batman, or is Batman there to make the villains? Like, would all of these villains be there if there wasn't this costume crime fighter for them to go up against? You know, is he somewhat responsible for the villains that haunt Gotham City? And I think that's kind of what they're also kind of playing along with.
All right. So, what right, else?
You read Justice League of America?
Yeah, number 10.
Yeah.
Before you start,
what a waste of a book.
That was going to be my question.
I'm so disappointed.
Are we enjoying Justice League of America? Because, granted,
I was hate reading this.
I've been behind, but I've read like issues probably like 24 and 20. Well, they haven't got that far. Whatever, the last two issues before this one, I believe. And it's like I've just been speed reading because I don't care about whatever mind prison they're stuck in. And was it Martian Manhunter and Stargirl? Is that her name? Stargirl?
Yeah.
Yeah, their journey to visit with each the hero and see what mental torment they're going through.
Well, and the problem is this particular issue is her origin story. So it's a bunch of flashbacks happening in her mind, and it really, like, this story is 10 minutes, but it's 10 minutes with her having all these flashbacks, so it just feels like it just slogs along. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just kind of waiting for them to get to the actual story, and the whole point is they can't do anything with the actual story because Forever Evil is a 7-month event. So they're just trying to figure out how to kind of pad the story along to kind of fill these gaps of time before they, you know, are actually able to do anything with the characters. And to be fair, the last page of the story is finally the insight you're kind of looking for that explains what happened in the first issue of Forever Evil. So they finally explain kind of what's been going on the very last page. The problem is you have to get to that last page before you finally go, oh, well, there was the one thing that's important that I needed from this book, and it's one page, and it's the very last page.
Mm-hmm. This book, since Forever Evil started, this book's turned into filler. And nothing against the creative team, but, like, who launched this book? Geoff Johns launched it, right, with David Finch. And then they left to go do Forever Evil.
Right, with all the flag covers.
Right.
They left to focus on Forever Evil, which, of course, I understand that. But, you know, Matt Kidd's come on, and it just seems like it's been like a rotating cast of at least artists since Matt Kent's been on. And I don't know. Like, and then I find myself starting to drop a lot of these Forever Evil books. Like, I'm going to read Justice League, Forever Evil, The Rogues Rebellion, and I think that's it. I didn't even try to read the Argus book because I was just like, no. I saw the art, and that was like enough for me. Arkham War doesn't look interesting. I read the first issue of that, didn't care. And I forget what other books are out there. I guess
just the Trinity of Sin books.
Yes, I'm going to say whatever the Blight thing going on. And I actually want to read that because I've actually been enjoying Justice League Dark the last like two or three books I read of it. But then I finally realized, you know, I need to stop trying to read everything. So I just sat and not even try to read that. It's probably good, but I'll just not know.
I mean, I can kind of see the point with a book like this because who is Stargirl and why do you care? You know, so they kind of want to have a story that showcases her, gives you her origin, so you are more drawn to the character, like you understand who she is and where she comes from and why she's, you know, playing the role of a hero.
Right.
But at the same time,
go on.
I was just going to say, I don't want that right in the middle of this giant crossover action-packed story of the villains taking over the planet. You know, like
and to boot, this book made me not like her. So
that didn't help either.
Right. So that doesn't help at all. Like, you know, granted, my exposure to Stargirl is very limited. I don't necessarily read that much DC, especially, you know, before, you know, we started Comic Chronicles. But, you know, my exposure to the character was, you know, very limited and definitely involved Justice League Unlimited, the animated series. But now I read this book, and I absolutely could not care less about this character. It was so annoying. that, you know what, if their goal was to make her likable, they failed. If their goal was to make me want to read more about her, they absolutely failed. So although, it sounds like bad job there.
Well, I was going to say, to be fair, though, they did the same type of story in Justice League 25. And in Justice League 25, it's all about Owlman. And you get his story and his origin and his why he's so interested in Nightwing and why Nightwing is a key part of the story.
Okay, are we going to move on to Justice League 25 now?
Yeah, well, I'm just going to like segue over into it just in the fact of saying that there it's the same concept between the two books, where very little time actually passes in the pages of Justice League 25. It's a lot of flashbacks. It's a lot of backstory.
Right.
But I loved this book. Like, I really liked the story. I liked the characterizations. I liked how, again,
you liked how creepy
pieces,
it was?
Well, and pieces of the story fell into place. Like, right. Some of the things we've been asking about since Forever Evil 1, they get answered in here.
Yeah. They definitely answered a lot of the whys.
But they get answered in a very organic way, whereas in Justice League of America 10, they just kind of like, all right, we ran out of time, so here you go. Here's the answer to what you've been looking for, and now we're done with the book for this month. Whereas that book felt like filler, this really felt like a good part of the story.
I definitely felt like this was an integral part of the story. Like, remember how we complained about the Infinity books, the Infinity crossover books in Avengers becoming, you know, the Infinity limited series wasn't exactly standalone. I think this makes, you know, this is a pretty integral part of the Forever Evil crossover.
Right.
And you can't really make sense of the crossover unless you read this book, of the series, limited series, unless you read this particular book. It does answer a lot, you know, a lot about Owlman and some of the motivations there.
Yeah. So I really like Justice League 25. Justice League of America 10 didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, this was creepy, but it was okay. You know, I thought the book was creepy, you know, in terms of just the story developments. It was definitely creepy. Like I said, Justice League of America number 10, what's our not click of the week? That's right up, that's right down there.
The right click of the week.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Instead of the left click. I don't know. But one thing about Justice League 25 that kind of stood out to me was, you know, all of these villain characters are obviously, you know, the evil version of the hero that you know.
Right.
So Owlman is the evil version of Batman. But his origin is much more than just, you know, Bruce Wayne's parents are murdered, so Bruce Wayne becomes Batman. You know, this isn't Bruce. This is Thomas. Exactly. This is the brother that in our universe went crazy and got locked away.
Right.
So, yeah, so that actually plays into the origin. Like, who the character is in the regular DC universe makes sense with who the character is in the evil universe. Like, it actually works.
Okay. Oh, and by the way, there is a hint of a character origin in this book.
I've got a question, because I didn't read it.
I'll leave it at that.
I didn't read this, but I saw, like, whatever 5 or 6 page preview that was up, whatever site I saw it on. And the whole the preview pages were what happened in the alley with the parents.
Crime Alley.
Crime Alley. And it confused me because isn't the Earth 3 version of Dick Grayson, wasn't he there? Or was that just Thomas Wayne I was looking at?
No, that was Bruce and Thomas.
Thomas. Mm-hmm. So who's Thomas in the regular New 52 universe?
Retconned him in?
He appeared in like the 70s. He was in a couple stories in like the 70s, and then he was forgotten for a long time. And Scott Snyder brought him back in the New 52 as the long-lost brother of Bruce, who basically went crazy and at a young age was put into an insane asylum just because the family didn't know how to care for him. And Bruce was so young when Thomas was taken away that he kind of forgot about him. You know, his parents were murdered, so it's not like he went to go visit him every Christmas or anything. You know, he's just this little kid, and the brother's gone, and he just, you know, life moves on. He doesn't really think about him or anything, and he's that crazy one who's locked away, and he just assumes that he became like a vegetable or whatever. And you find out that Thomas actually has been plotting his revenge against Bruce. He wants his life back. He wants the fortune back. He wants the mansion back. And he actually, tries to take on Bruce, not knowing when he sets out to do this, of course, that Bruce is Batman. And so it kind of comes back against him in the worst way possible. But, I mean, that's the idea, is that he is that evil brother. And in the Earth 3 universe, he's the evil brother that gets the upper hand, as opposed to the evil brother who is cast away.
So, and this, all that explanation for Thomas is in the New 52?
Yeah, it was earlier arc in Scott Snyder's run had the whole story of Thomas Wayne Jr.
I thought basically the New 52 Batman had been nothing but the Court of Owls and then the Death of the Family.
It was before Death of the Family.
Right. Oh. It's the in-between, because Court of Owls is the very beginning.
Because I was going to say, I'm pretty sure Thomas Wayne, evil Thomas Wayne, is some villain, some evil named villain by now. Kind of like James Gordon Jr., Senior, whatever his name is.
Yeah, James Gordon Jr. Mm-hmm. He's part of Suicide Squad now.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And don't forget, like I mentioned, there is a secret origin of a character possibly in this book.
I'll get to it. I like these origins. I like Justice League doing the origins of Ultraman and Owlman.
But like I say, they do it in a way that's kind of organic to the story that's being told, whereas it felt much more forced in Justice League of America, and it just didn't play out well in Justice League of America, whereas here it plays out. It's very interesting here.
Right, because it's more dramatic, because it's more annoying, because the character's annoying. The way they write the character in Justice League of America number 10, we're talking about Stargirl, it's just annoying. So it was just not, it wasn't enticing. It didn't make you want to read it anymore. Like I said, I was hate reading the whole thing.
Yeah.
All right. And enough. DC stays losing.
All right.
Yes. There has one more DC.
One more DC here. Forever Evil Arkham War. Just to recap the story, basically is, the villains have carved up Gotham City for themselves. And Bane is there, and Bane basically wants to take over the whole city for himself. He sets up an allegiance with Penguin, and basically the people he's working against are like Mr. Freeze and the Mad Hatter and Scarecrow, and all of those guys have banded together to fight against Bane and his army. And what they did in this particular issue is Bane is... he's trying to, unite the city under himself. The bad guys have found the Talons, the assassins from the Court of Owls, and they are going to basically unfreeze them and make them part of their army against Bane. So Bane has to, somehow figure out how is he going to fight against these villains and how is he going to fight against the Talon. And Penguin says to him, there's no way that you're ever going to beat these guys because they're not afraid of you. They've been fighting Batman all of these years. Batman is the only thing that they fear. They don't fear anybody else because nobody else is Batman. And so Bane decides that he has to take the legend of Batman for himself. So he actually constructs a new suit of armor, basically, that ties in with his existing costume and adds the Batman accents. And he now is becoming almost like the Azrael Nightfall version of Batman. He is kind of recreating the legend of Batman as the supreme villain of Gotham City that everybody has to be fearful of. So he is basically creating his own evil version of the Batman legend and kind of co-opting it now. People are afraid of that character, and, he's making that character into him.
And that actually sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was very interesting because, if you think about it, nobody who stands up to Batman has been able to beat him. Bane was the only guy who came close, but then Batman, returned from that even and beat, Bane back into his own little banana republic and got him out of Gotham. So he decides that that's the only way it's going to take. So there's going to be some sort of confrontation when Batman finally returns, where you're going to have Bane, Batman, and Batman going at it.
And then plus, Batman's going to have to do something about all these villains having different sections of Gotham City split up.
Well, I almost kind of feel like the villains are going to, you know, kind of destroy themselves, like all the infighting between them.
That'll be resolved by the time Forever Evil ends.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I heard you go through all of that, and I think I read something about this, and all I'm thinking about is Kraven's Last Hunt. That's pretty much all I'm thinking about.
Well, that's probably a fair comparison. But yeah, I think it is. I mean, for a lot of people, that might make it more enticing.
Sure.
Kind of, actually.
Except it'll be missing all the poetic parts, right?
Yeah, but poetry is for jerks.
Okay. Now, all you guys, all the listeners and the viewers out there, go and read Kraven's Last Hunt. That's some good stuff.
So that should be it for not Image, but DC, right?
Yep.
I think so.
Okay.
See how different it is when I actually read the books?
Read what you can read. Don't have to read everything.
Yep.
Let's see. If no one else has anything else, it looks like it's... Oh, actually, I do. I forgot I actually added to the spreadsheet. What did I read? Yes, Dead Body Road number one from Image Comics. This was by Justin Jordan and Mateo Scalera. So it's basically you have your Punisher type character called Orson Gage. He's a ex-cop, I believe, and his wife is also a policewoman, but she's killed during a bank heist gone wrong. So he's out for vengeance, and everyone that was involved must die. They all must die. I think that's like the headline tag for the series. It's a 6-issue miniseries from Image, and you know, I enjoyed it. Mateo Scalera's art's pretty nice. I noticed him on Secret Avengers back when he teamed up with Rick Remender. And he's, of course, teaming with Remender again on the Black Science book that launched a couple weeks ago. He draws even just people standing around. Like, there was this one sort of like long, widespread image from the bank heist gone wrong that's pretty cool. And there's like a car chase scene. And, you know, Orson Gage, he's a pretty simple man. You know, one of his policeman friends comes by to sort of like say, you know, hey, I know what you got planned. I'm not going to try and stop you, but you know, just think I'm here to at least bring up the fact you shouldn't do this, but I know you're going to do it anyway. And he sort of like tells him a couple leads he has, cause he's one of the investigating officers for the crime. But, you know, as miniseries go, can't hate it. Any other Image books that anyone else get to?
Not here. Okay. Did you read Walking Dead?
Well, yeah, Walking Dead. I mean,
I didn't see that on your sheet.
Come on.
Oh, yeah, I didn't scroll down. Never mind, there's two books on here. Please continue.
Well, basically, All Out War... you know, these different factions of communities that have kind of evolved during the zombie apocalypse are butting heads now. The one big thing about this issue is that apparently the zombie infection is starting to change. It used to be that every person on Earth was infected with the zombie, you know, plague, and they would die. And then 6 to 12 hours later, they would kind of wake up and come back to life and be a zombie. Well, now apparently it looks like the infection has mutated because one of the characters gets shot and he falls over. And within like a minute, he is popping back up as a zombie. And they're starting, of course, this is in the middle of a giant firefight, this big war that they're having. You know, people are kind of dying left and right, and now it looks like they're popping right back up. And this kind of changes the strategy of it, because you're no longer safe kind of going into battle. The person standing next to you, if they get hit, if you don't keep moving and get out of the way, they're going to turn around and start trying to eat you. And so now they've got to kind of change the war tactic. But one of the big things that happens is the guy that you see here in the middle of the cover, he ran one of the other communities, and this community basically became subservient to this character Negan. And Negan is the big bad guy who he promises you protection, but he wants half your food and half your medicine. You know, he comes by every couple of weeks and wants a tribute of half your food supply and whatever. And in return, he says, you know, he'll keep you safe and, you know, keep marauders away and keep the zombies from overtaking your little community. And this guy basically gave in to Negan, and he didn't want war, and he didn't want to fight. And all the people in his little community, you know, only a handful of them have been taking part in this battle. But as soon as he comes back from watching this war kind of break out between the groups, Maggie, if you know from the TV show, if you've been watching there, she basically moved to this guy's community because it seems safe, and she realizes that this war is what they need. And so she starts rallying the troops in this community to get into the fight. So it looks like you've got this new, you know, unit of fresh blood getting ready to move in and join the battle. But at the same time, the rules are starting to change because the zombie infection is, you know, changing how it's playing out. So you've got a lot of different things kind of going on at the same time. This is one of those issues. Walking Dead has this problem where some issues are really action-packed and a lot of stuff happens, and then you have these other issues where nothing really happens and it's a lot of people talking. And this is following that same mode where you had a bunch of stuff happen last issue. So in this issue, there's a lot of talking, but the talking going on in this one is much more story centric, and it's not people philosophizing about life and death and, you know, why would we bother and blah, 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 the stuff that you usually get that happens in these kind of down issues. This is a down issue where they're strategizing and they're mobilizing troops and there's still stuff going on. So even though it's a down issue, it still keeps that level of excitement up. So I liked it, you know.
Okay.
It's back on up. Back on up. One second.
Yep.
Sorry. IDW, G.I. Joe number 11 came out, which I think I mentioned it last week. Oh, no, I didn't. I mean, not last week, earlier. But
is this the origin of Roadblock?
Correct. And the only thing is I'm going to say is if you saw G.I. Joe Retaliation, you have seen a part of this book, in a way.
Is that good or bad?
Retaliation, was that the animated thing?
No, that was the second live action.
Oh, the one, okay, the one with Rock.
John McClane.
Yeah.
it's hard to keep them all straight.
Yeah. It's kind of bad. It's something that I've noticed in this book, because it's, I don't know if one is taken from the other one way or the other. But I have noticed a couple of the things here and there that seems to have come from the movies, or like I said, vice versa. I don't know, but I mean, it was a good read. It was just funny to see that. So I don't know if this seems like just starts the arc of his backstory. 'Cause it basically starts from when he got hurt during something that happened in a couple of issues. Something happened earlier, but before he got the assignment he's on now. So it's a good read, though.
Do you also read Special Missions? Or just
I need to start, because they do. And matter of fact, they show up in this one, too. I need to, because there's – I don't know if there's, like, any direct overlap, but I do see every now and then one a call to the other, or you'll see, like, Special Missions will pop up in here. So they are kind of linking the books.
Okay. I know Dirt had another Image book, right?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. Alex and Ada.
Which I had the first issue, which I need to read. I remember the art looked nice, so I was like, oh, this looks like something I want to read.
Yeah, so basically this guy, I don't know, he's like in his late 20s, early 30s, whatever. It's his birthday. It's the near future where things are kind of the same, but they have like holographic TVs and they have the chips in their head. They can make phone calls to each other, whatever. And his grandma decides to get him an android companion. And so it's kind of like part butler, but also part, you know, your own personal love slave or whatever. And, you know, grandma is, she has her own and she just loves having this, you know, young buff man around, even though he's an android. So gets, Alex this, you know, female android companion. And he's like, I can't keep this thing. Like, this feels so wrong on so many levels. Like, you know, it's like you're owning a person, which I don't want any part of. And it feels like you're cheating on the whole idea of having a girlfriend and having a relationship. You know, this android is just kind of there and he doesn't like the idea of having it. But at the same time, as soon as the android is activated and is talking to him, he starts to like feel bad about feeling bad about having the android. Like he starts to feel guilty about these thoughts of, well, it's just an object. It's a thing. I have to throw it away. I have to get rid of it. And he, you know, he feels responsible for it, even though it's this inanimate object with a fake personality. So he's having this hard time really kind of understanding, you know, how do you treat something that has a personality, even though it's not really real? Like, does this thing actually have feelings? You know, how deep does this rabbit hole go? And so he's kind of afraid to just reject it and throw it away. He doesn't want to hurt its feelings and, you know, whatever. So it's this very interesting character piece about this idea of technology and how far we take technology, and then what are some of the like emotional ramifications of having these things. And it's from Jonathan Luna, and he's written a lot of books like Sword,
right.
And Girls and Ultra. So he does a lot of these types of stories where he takes, you know, something that seems somewhat familiar and then goes off on some kind of weird story tangent with it. So this so far has, you know, really been an intriguing story.
Okay.
And it's only the second issue, and it's an easy read. So, I mean, you know, this is one that you should probably, you could pick it up and you could read both issues back to back in, you know, in an hour.
So that's it for Image. Anymore?
I want to say one thing, though. If anyone's reading Lazarus, this is the worst cover I've seen on a comic in a long time.
Yikes.
I read the first issue back in maybe like October, finally, because it had been out before then, and I liked the first issue, and I was like, ooh, I'm going to start reading this, and of course, it's fallen by the wayside.
I have one and two to read, but I just saw this cover, and it's like, is this the story of the big-headed children with swords? Like, I don't understand.
As far as I know, it's not.
Sure,
that's just like maybe a poorly drawn image of the main female protagonist.
Yeah.
Whose name I forget. She has like one of those weird names like Heaven or Eleven or something like that.
She looks like a character from Reboot.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I just read this, you know, as part of the Comixology free comic per day giveaway, and I can't even remember the main character's name.
Was it Lazarus number one was the free book?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
On the second day of Christmas.
On the second day of Christmas.
Yeah, go ahead.
Comixology gave to me Lazarus issue number one.
And I don't remember what her name was.
Exactly.
So we go straight to Marvel now?
Marvel Now!
Marvel Now, before the all-new Marvel Now.
Woohoo.
I'll get mine one out the way. I read Uncanny X-Men number 15. INH, I think that's how they're tagging it or whatever.
Yep.
And it was the Inhumanity tie-in where it's girls' night out. All the
what could go wrong?
It was an issue wrong. Like this where they introduced Jubilee back in the day.
What happened in this? I'm trying to remember what did go wrong. Something happened when they were out. Of course, when they were out shopping, they saw a cocooned Inhuman, right? And I forget what the Inhuman's power.
And you don't remember what happened?
Well, no, I read it. I didn't read it this week. I read it like last week. But I remember whoever hatched out the cocoon had some kind of power to like knock out all the X-Men, and then AIM showed up because they're like this big power player now in the Marvel Universe, which I'm not really a fan of, but they showed up because they were collecting all these, or at least attempting to collect all these different humans. And they were like, oh, we don't need these mutants, and humans are the new, basically as Marvel is going to be promoting, these mutants don't matter anymore. It's all about Inhumans. We're replacing you.
And this seems like it's going to be the theme in the books, in the tie-in books, where they're going to start, you know, either coming across cocoons, or they've already kind of started that, coming across cocoons or a new Inhuman for the next couple of months or so.
So this is like a standalone issue, and then next week they get back to the regular whatever X-Men drama that's taking place. X-Men versus S.H.I.E.L.D. Which actually takes place in Wolverine X-Men, which surprisingly I haven't read yet. But that's my Marvel book of the week. Surprisingly, only one book I read from Marvel this week.
Wow. Okay. Anybody else got any Marvel books?
I have Avengers AI 7. INH, whatever they call it.
I read this too. Let's talk about it. Go ahead.
Okay. I like this book. It's pretty good. I'm going to go ahead and say it. It's probably going to be my click of the week.
What?
Yeah.
Avengers AI? What?
Really? Tell me what is good about this book.
So the part of the reason. Anyway, we'll get to that. Pym's team is exploring the wreckage of Atlan, or whatever you pronounce it. And they come across Daredevil, who starts an altercation with Doombot, but it's not really an altercation. And it's a really interesting read because I really didn't realize that that Daredevil and Hank had that much of a history or any real dealings.
Well, they have recent history, right?
Exactly, and it goes into that, and also right before they meet. We meet up with a new Inhuman who, for any Lovecraft fans, will enjoy, I'm sure.
What's that? Lovecraft, yes.
And you also get see the softer side of Doombot, which was interesting.
I thought that was actually pretty well written.
Yeah.
The softer side of the Doombot. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
So I have to agree with you on most of the good things you said about the story. I liked that they had some nice characterization for the Doombot in here. When they were talking about, you know, they were flashing back to Daredevil's interactions with Pym. You know, as a regular reader of Daredevil, I remembered that, and I guess a story point for a lot of these books now, where everyone just comes across these cocoons or these Inhumans who are just becoming inhuman after being exposed to the Terrigen mist, the Terrigen bomb. So I guess we'll see this, and you know, it's going to be an ongoing thing for a little while.
Yep. Oh, and
there's a reveal at the end.
There you go. I was going to get to that. Yeah, a character we haven't seen in. Quite a while comes back, which I'm kind of to see what they do with.
Can I guess who it was?
Sure.
Going by solicits for future.
Oh, yeah, you've seen it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was about to ring the bell.
I don't care, so I won't say it. I read like issues 1, 2, and maybe 3, and then I stopped because I wasn't into it, and I was like, yeah. I saw Savannah, Georgia was mentioned in the preview page for number 6. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll try number 6 then.
Of course.
Then I read it and I was like, yeah, no. Let me stop reading this again.
I could not care less about that Demetrius you know, character being the villain. But I like this issue because, you know, I like the you know, that there was actual character development for the characters, even right. though they're all robots, yeah. you know?
Yeah, and Demetrius thing was just what it was. It was just a beginning arc, and I'm sure that whenever they go into 10,000 years in the future, that'll come back up into a bigger scope. But
sure,
it's a fun
sure.
read.
All right. So anybody else? Dirt, you have Amazing Spidey. Well, we already talked about Amazing Spidey 700.2. Did you read point 3?
I did read point 3.
I did not get to point 3.
Basically, what happens in point 3 is that Spider-Man is in a fight with some random villain that has fire powers. Mm-hmm. And the guy...
Firebrand. I did get to the first couple of pages.
Oh, is that... Okay. Well, anyway, mm-hmm. he overloads his firepower and sets them both ablaze. And these, ambulance pulls up. They pick him up and put him in the ambulance, take him to the hospital. And when he wakes up, he realizes that, one, all his skin is burned off. He's covered in bandages. So nobody knows his identity. They have no idea who he is or why he was in this fire. But as he's healing and getting out of his room and checking out the hospital, he realizes that this is a hospital for villains, that these supervillains have their own medical center that they call the Black Lodge. And there's some super genius doctor guy who's running this place, and he has his own kind of code of conduct where all the villains have to kind of get along while they're there. But it's this place where they can all rehab and they can strategize and they can show off their new equipment, and it's like part clubhouse for villains and part medical center. And so now he realizes that not only has he stumbled across this place where all these villains are, but B, he has to get out before his identity becomes known. But he's in this wheelchair, his powers aren't really working, he's healing, but he's not strong, he's not going to be able to fight anybody, and he's got to figure out like how the heck he's going to get out of there.
Cool.
And I enjoyed this much more than I enjoyed the story from point 1 and point 2, which was him versus the snowstorm. You know, this it's just kind of one of those could be anywhere stories. You know, it fits in the past at some point when Peter Parker, Spider-Man, it doesn't really, clue itself in as being in any particular time period or anything like that. But it's just kind of one of those fun, hero versus villain out of water type stories.
Right. I definitely like, point 1, point 2, but maybe it's just, because Spidey's such a New York centric hero, and that, seeing some of the aspects of the story, especially with like a massive snowstorm hitting New York City, it definitely like struck a couple of personal chords with me in terms of point 1 and point 2. I just started reading this on my way home, so I did not get to finish it. So I'm looking forward to reading it. And I'm glad that it was good.
And see, all that stuff in point 1 and 2 where it's in New York City, I couldn't care less,
Right. Because it just didn't resonate.
Yeah.
So, all right. That's cool. How about, what do we have here? Cable and X-Force number 17. Bueller? Anybody?
Which
nobody? You didn't read this, Tim?
Yeah, surprisingly, I didn't get to Cable and X-Force, which is usually that's usually one of the first books I read from Marvel.
Wow.
How was it?
I didn't read it. I was just asking because I know that's one of your books.
Yeah, like I was just telling Dork Geek because I didn't get to any of the Cataclysm books yet. And
no, you didn't read Cataclysm Ultimate Spider-Man number 2?
No, but that's happens.
That's a candidate for my click of the week because I enjoyed reading that. I read it twice.
Actually, I was going to say that's one that I read and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great. Let's just talk about that now since we're all talking about it.
Which order do you need to read them in? Because two Catalyst books came out this week.
I haven't read the other one.
Actually, I read them both, and it doesn't matter because what happens in Ultimate Comics Spider-Man happens before what you read in Cataclysm last week.
Which I haven't read yet either.
So this is in Cataclysm last week, they talked about Spider-Man is one of the few – there's only like two characters that have had interaction with the regular Marvel Universe where Galactus comes from. And so they want to use him to send him into the regular Marvel universe to see if they can find somebody like Reed Richards, who's fought Galactus and beat him, and see if they can bring him into their world, you know, to fight him off. And so they're gearing up to send Spider-Man away. And this issue happens before any of that conversation happens. So in this story, this one actually centers around Miles and his dad.
Right.
And the history that they have from Ultimatum, when New York City was flooded in the Ultimate Universe, and how that crisis kind of ties in with Galactus now attacking New York
City. Miles wasn't even created back then, right?
Right. I mean, obviously he would have been alive in storyline, but he wasn't part – he wasn't a character of the, you know, Spider-Man mythos
right.
back then. So this kind of tells what he was doing during that time and how that relates to the crisis that's going on now. Right. And actually
– oh, I was going to say – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's like the last couple pages of this story is something that they've been building up to in the entire run of Miles Morales as Spider-Man.
Sure.
Like it finally happens at the end of this book, and it's one of those things where, like, I was so angry that it ended. I was like, "No, this can't be
fair." Yeah. Because what was nice about this book is that it moved very briskly, but there were still some great character beats for Dagger, Cloak, and even what is that? The Power Bomb? What's her name? Bombshell.
Bombshell.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
There is some great character beats for these characters in a book that moved so quickly that, you know, that I was really impressed by this book. You know, I was, like Dirt said, I was disappointed that I reached the last page.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Tim, do yourself a favor and read this before you go to bed tonight.
I will try. I need to read the one that came out. What came out last week?
That was Cataclysm Ultimate's Last Stand, number 2, I think.
You don't need to read that.
Was it the X-Men book?
Oh, maybe it was X-Men.
I think that might be why I skipped it. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not necessary. It's not...
And this, the other one that came out this week was Ultimates. Really, the only thing that came out of this is, one, Hercules in the Ultimate Universe is awesome.
Hercules.
And two, the Galactus Swarm has now figured out how to take over the mutants of the Ultimate Universe. One of the things that happened in the Ultimate X-Men book a couple years ago is that they revealed that the mutants of the Ultimate Universe are all genetically manipulated. Like, right. they were lab created. Not the spontaneous mutation of humanity. And somehow Galactus and his mutation with the Galactus Swarm of the Ultimate Universe has realized that they can use that experimental DNA or whatever it is, they can take that over. And so the Galactus Swarm can come in and find a hero. Like, they take Hulk and they throw Hulk at it, thinking that Hulk was just going to smash everything. And the Galactus Swarm kind of takes over Hulk and embeds themselves into Hulk. And now they control Hulk. So now Hulk is part of the Galactus Swarm. And that's where Nick Fury is like, you know, he starts speaking in characters instead of words because they can't print the foul language he's using, because he's realized now that every mutant on Earth is potentially part of the Galactus Swarm, because those little things just have to go up and attach themselves to him, and now Galactus can take over the heroes. And so that, again, kind of changes the whole power shift of the story.
Quick question. The Cataclysm Ultimate's Last Stand, issue 2 hasn't come out, right?
I think 2 came out. 2 is the one with Nick Fury standing in a big pile of bullets.
Oh, okay. I remember that cover. Did I read that? I'm just trying to go back, trying to see what I've read. Okay.
The problem is that so many of these books cover the same ground. You're just seeing the same story from a different point of view. So it does kind of get confusing over which ones you've read and which ones you haven't, just because you read something and you go, oh, I thought I read this already. And then you realize you did. You just saw it from the other side of town.
Right, a different angle.
Yeah, now you're seeing the same thing again.
Right, all right. What else we got here? We skipped past Captain America number 14. I read this. It was a good ending to the nuke storyline. There's definitely some political overtones in this. Not surprising because it is a Captain America book. The Remender story moves along. It's, you know, there's definitely some, I guess, real characterization for Nuke, because in the past, what we've seen Nuke as, especially during Born Again and Daredevil, and even in the Wolverine Origin book, when they were showing how Nuke and Wolverine were connected. This book definitely, you know, gives Nuke a lot more speaking parts than I think he's ever had before. So they did definitely develop the character a little bit. He's definitely a little bit more than just, you know, give me this pill and give me that pill. But Steve Rogers is definitely still dealing with a little bit of a post-traumatic stress disorder from having been in the Zola world for so long. So, that's definitely a backdrop or part of the story that you definitely have to read some context into. And there's a little bit of a freedom of the press thing, too, in here. I'm not so sure I'm so keen on where that was going. But the last part of the book leads to the introduction of the Iron Nail, which is a character that Remender is introducing to the book, and we're going to get some more development on who this character is in the Winter Soldier limited series that's going to come out in the new year, and in more Cap books. So if you want to get into Cap, this is actually not a terrible jumping on point, because, you know, there's definitely a lot of action and there's a lot of exposition explaining a lot of things. One thing I did like about this book is that, you know, there's they recognize the generational gap between Nuke, who they, I guess because time still hasn't, you know, completely gone astray in Marvel to the point where Nuke is a Desert Storm veteran or a Iraqi war veteran. He's still a non-veteran. So, you know, there's a little bit of a back and forth between him and Cap, because Cap is obviously a veteran of, you know, that war where they fought Adolf Hitler. And
wait, which war was that?
Yeah, which war was that again? there's some interplay and dialogue involving that, and I thought that was kind of cool. So, like I said, you know, this is definitely worth a read, and it leads into the next storyline. So give it a shot.
Okay.
What else do we have in Marvel?
Nobody read Marvel Knights Hulk?
No. Did you?
No.
I guess I'll get around to
it. I'm skipping those Marvel Knight books. Guess it's Peter. Let's see, what else is on the spreadsheet? We've talked about everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because I would have had most of these Marvel books on my spreadsheet, on my part of the spreadsheet. Let me see.
I'm surprised you didn't read Wolverine and X-Men. I thought for sure you would have read.
Yeah, I would have had a few more, too.
Nova is usually when you get to. Inhumanity Awakening.
Yeah, everything besides that Awakening book, I would have read by now. But, yeah, busy week.
Mm-hmm.
So I might bite the bullet on that Inhumanity one.
It's by Kent, who also did.
I read Wolverine and the X Men. I just don't remember much about it. And it's 11/21, so
that means it's click of the week.
We need to get our clicks of the weekend.
Oh wait. There's one thing I want to talk about first before you do that.
Go ahead.
Just to throw this in there, WWE has a new comic, okay? Which I mean, all right, but. One thing I do give them credit for is that each one of they had four different covers on the main book, and each cover is kind of patterned after a famous comic book cover. Like this one, this is the hardest one to really kind of pick out, but this is, I believe, based off an old Amazing Spider-Man cover. And they did a second version when you flip it over where it's got this kind of old style Marvel header to it. You had another one here. This one is done by Althea Martinez, and she's done work for on Batgirl and on Iron Man and a bunch of random stuff. But then they brought in on this particular cover. Let's see. This is Dean Haspiel, mm-hmm. and this is an old Daredevil cover. And so they have a flip over where you got that classic style. It looks like the old Daredevil logo.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Next one is Michael Golden, and he's got this the worst looking Mark Henry here on the cover, but it is that Spider-Man versus Venom cover, mm-hmm. Which you can see on there.
That's right.
Jill Thompson did this one of CM Punk, which has the old Fantastic Four look to it with that Jack Kirby style. So not a big fan of the comic itself, but the mm-hmm. idea that they would do this with the
as
covers.
As an homage. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that was really, really neat.
That is cool.
Nice. Yeah, I remember hearing about it. I just never actually tried to look to see what it was about.
I flipped through it, and it's basically like it's this town, and all the wrestlers live in this town, and like they all have different jobs within the city, and something causes them to go berserk and start these random fights with each other and break up the town, and they got to find out why suddenly guys are picking fights and going crazy, and I don't know. It's definitely written for 12-year-olds,
Okay. So, clicks of the week. Let me see what mine will be. Let me put my spreadsheet up for my four books I read. I'm going to go with Justice League 3000 number one.
What? Really? Wow.
The art, man.
There you go. That is
art was that good.
Nice. I'm going to have to read that now.
Just look at it.
Yeah. All right. So who wants to go next?
I know I said mine, so it was Avengers AI 7.
Nice.
Which I have a hard time finding that one, but
I liked it. I don't think it was my click of the week. I think I would go my non-click of the week, the least click of the week. I don't know what we're going to call that. The stinker of the week is definitely Justice League of America number 10. Oh, you got it up so fast. You knew exactly what I was
doing. I knew exactly where you were going.
Oh, my God. I hate reading something. It's sad. But my actual click of the week, what I would recommend people to read, Captain America came in a close second to Cataclysm Ultimate Spider-Man, number two.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn because I also kind of want to say it's Spider-Man just because it, it finally brings the story full circle to where it started in the first issue. Right as it looks like they're getting ready to end the Ultimate Universe. I kind of love how they, put that bow on it. But at the same time, I really want to throw out Protocol Orphans, and I want people to take a look at this book because I think most people would not give this book a second thought when they see it on the stands. And it really is, like, there's so much intrigue. There's so much... if you watch something like Red or The Losers, or if you've seen any of those movies, you like those types of books. I mean, this falls along with those types of stories so well, and there's so much going on, and the way that they have these the CIA and the NSA and these different groups kind of playing off of each other. I just love that type of storyline. So this is another one of those books that probably when issue 3 comes out, I'm going to go back and read issues 1 and 2 again and then read issue 3 just to make sure I've got a handle on it.
Have you heard of an anime called Gunslinger Girl? Dirt.
I've heard of it, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
Okay, because it sounds slight. I hadn't seen all of it, but it sounds kind of similar. So I guess if anybody knows that one, may be interested in this.
Got me.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it come through the store, because we do trade in on anime and manga. But I mean, I've never sat down and read it.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway.
Okay. All right.
So wrap us up, Tim. Send us home.
So next week we will be having an interview, and we'll also be having our 50th episode, because we're going to record a 49th sometime between now and when we have our guest on next week. I guess to hype the show, I guess I should announce who our guest will be. It will be Glenn Brunswick, who is the writer for the Image Comics book Reality Check. It was a 4-issue series. So if you have any questions for Glenn, make sure to send them in to us on Twitter or email us at theclicknation@gmail.com, and we'll make sure to ask him on the show.
There's also the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles hashtag.
Absolutely. Yep.
Got the column up on TweetDeck, so we'll see those tweets.
Didn't you make a Twitter account for...
Yeah, I haven't actually done anything with it yet.
Oh.
I didn't actually create it. My bro created it for me.
Just to make sure we got it, right? He's a squatter.
I guess so. If you want to send tweets to it, it is... Make sure I know what it is. It's at CB Cron, I think. Shit, I don't know. Hold on.
That sounds right.
Something like that. When I actually start using it is when I actually want to announce it. So
gotcha.
I'm not doing anything with it yet. So yeah, stay tuned for that news. And of course, again, we'll be live next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts, as my video for some reason has gone away. I am at TimDogg98. There I am. And at the Click Nation. Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And check his website out, popculturenetwork.com. Agent 70 is at Agent_70 on Twitter. And Roddy Cat has 2 Twitter accounts, because I remember this time. He is at Roddy Cat with 2 D's. And News Nerd Need. Is that it?
News Nerds Need. Close enough.
.com.
Oh, I do have it, but.
Yeah, I've got comicbookchronicles.com and haven't done anything with that yet either. For future. And once episode 50 goes up, I will have actually new theme music for the audio portion, which I accidentally put up on episode 46 or something like that when I was finally starting to upload stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, I need to save that for the 50th. So just ignore that if you hear it, because you'll hear it again on the 50th again. Because I'm lazy and I don't feel like going back and changing the audio and re-editing the whole podcast just to change an intro and outro music. But shout outs to at Variant Dash on Twitter for doing the theme music for us. Actually, I need to try to set it up to intro on the live show too.
Yeah.
More things to do. But with that, it's been a long night, so we'll get going. Thanks for tuning into the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.
Bye now.
Bye bye.
Valiant Dark One! What? Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo! I'm steady tripping over them pages and dogging Adam Black, no! Yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art! The man, Stan Lee,